Power Lunch right here live in the city of gastronomy. This is Around the Table, broadcasting live from Penka Restaurant at number 50 Broadway in downtown, where we invite the most interesting and influential newsmakers, tastemakers, style makers, lawmakers, movers and shakers, healers, foodies, and friends for lunch. Each and every Tuesday, we're here at Penka, where Chef David Solorzano has just reimagined and revitalized, and that's such a key word, the cuisine at this extraordinary place. Vitality is on the menu at Penka Restaurant, and the lunch specials that are so remarkably delicious and bright and filled with vitality beckon. Please come and join us and have lunch with us today. We'll be here until 3 o'clock. Hey, there he is, the man of the hour, as if right on cue. Chef David Solorzano is in the house with us. Joining us today, we have, a little later on in the show, Regina Romero, who is running for mayor of the city of Tucson, will be joining us. In addition, our good friend Donna DeConcini, the founder of the Southern Arizona Animal Food Bank, is with us. She is also the head farmer market guru in town. As far as we're concerned, she's our market friend, and she's going to be talking about the markets she's got going on, coming up, and what's going on where you can help, because her animals and her friends are in a little bit of need, and that's why the Southern Arizona Animal Food Bank is on our list of organizations worth paying an awful lot of attention to, because it's a story that bears repeating and mentioning. Sadly, we need to do that. And our guest of honor sitting in the hot seat today, directly across from me at our luncheon table, is new to town, and we are welcoming her. All of you out there, join me in welcoming a fellow foodie who has, for the last couple of decades, been writing really amazing prose and teaching us how to be more sustainable before it was cool. When we were still going out and fine dining with white tablecloths, she was imagining how you could eat better and more deliciously locally for $40 a week. It's true. She'll tell us her secrets. She's going to share some of those with us and talk about coming to town and making a splash. She's got big, big news about something that she has been working on. Robin Mather is here, and we welcome her. How are you? Welcome to town. Bienvenidos.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer. It's really a privilege.
And we are thrilled to have you here because you, in your history, among other things, you hosted a radio show several years ago.
Yeah, you know, newspaper people, which is what I am at heart, is we tended to be a peripatetic bunch, and I lived in Jackson, Mississippi, where I was the food editor of the Jackson Clarion Ledger, and had a call-in radio show that I did weekly, and I absolutely loved it. It was a three-hour call-in show.
And people would call and ask you questions about how they're making something or how to make something, or...
Man, the questions were all over the place. I can remember one call where a guy called and said, I brought my fiance to dinner and at my mother's house, and when she saw what we were having, she ran out of the room screaming, and I laughed and said, what were you eating? And he said, well, my mom had prepared a dish of squirrel heads.
I was going to say, not squirrel.
Squirrel heads.
Squirrel heads.
Yeah.
The delicacy.
Yeah. So, and you know, one of the things that I realized when I did that show, and that I've certainly had reiterated over my career, is that you absolutely must not mock someone else's food choices.
Right.
You must not.
David Solorzano is the executive chef now at Penka, and he joins us. So we join him, he joins us, we're together. We've had a lot of fun, and I have to say, Penka is quickly becoming one of the most delicious and busy places for lunch in downtown Tucson. For that, we have to say congratulations, and thank you to Chef David Solorzano for revitalizing this cuisine. We've got herbs all over the table, thanks to our friend Donna DeConcini, who literally brought these from her own garden. And it's just a great representation of the kinds of things that you've brought to this reimagination of Penka. And I'm thrilled to have you back. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm awesome. Have you met Robin Mathers, the new food writer in town? She's writing for the Arizona Daily Star, and she's got big news. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And Donna DeConcini is one of the farmers market. So this is what happens in downtown Tucson. People come together. I mean, we were here earlier today. We had movers and shakers in and out of the room. You saw who was here today. We'd love to have you join us. David, talk a little bit about summer in Tucson and at the helm here at Panka, what it's meant as executive chef to reimagine luncheon in downtown when it's hot.
Well, I mean, it's difficult. A lot of people leave. Students leave. A lot of snowbirds leave. And it's really hot outside, so not a lot of people like to come out. But, you know, it's not really a reason for not to come out. I feel like it's more of a reason to come out and eat. Like, it's not... Me, personally, I don't like to cook at home when it when it's 120 degrees outside. I don't want to be 120 degrees inside as well.
And by the way, so you were there at Tucson Foodie headquarters when we did the Tucson Foodie edition of this show, and you came and visited it, and I said to Jennifer Teufel from Tucson Foodie, it's too hot to cook, and sometimes it's even too hot to eat, and she said, no, you're wrong. And I'm glad to hear you agree with me that it can be
well,
too hot.
Well, no, I agree with Jennifer, because it's not too hot to eat, it's just too not hot too hot to cook, yeah.
So you agree with both of us.
Yeah, I mean, it's never too hot to eat.
Especially when those gorgeous... Let's start with my favorite hot weather food of yours, those brilliant little green salads. It's impossible to tell somebody until they experience it for themselves how much vitality and brightness and lightness in these bowls you create. What did you do to make it so special and light and bright?
Well, I try to get... I try to... buy local and organic when I can. I try to source responsibly whenever I can't get those things at a, you know, at a good price. So yeah, just getting, you know, just getting a little bit more crunchier greens, something that's not, that's gonna have a little bit of substance but a little bit more water content to be able to cool you off in the summer. And then usually just do like a lemon cream with garlic. And then just use like herbs to lighten it up a little bit.
It's so bright and so delicious, and that little kiss of mint in there just absolutely elevates it.
And that's what I was going to say, the mint. The fresh herbs and the mint that you have in your salad just puts it into a whole other category.
It's so
wonderful.
Delicious. It's so delicious. And if you haven't tasted it, please come down and try it for lunch. Tell me about what you have. You've got a lunch menu that you've got out. You've also got a great happy hour for after work. Tell people about what the afternoon offerings are here at Panka.
Well, I mean, most of the stuff on our menu is available during lunch. It's a little bit pared down. Being downtown, we get a lot of people from offices and from the courthouse, so they don't really have a lot of time to eat. So we try to get something that is substantial, affordable, and something that is just going to come out quickly.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of those options for lunch. For happy hour, you have a little bit of the appetizer options from the dinner menu. You know, like salads and stuff like that, and like the fundido and the ceviche. But I mean, most of those things are available for lunch as well. And then we have the dinner menu, and then we also have an industry menu. It's being offered the last 2 hours of every night. So that's the happy hour menu, as well as some of the dinner menu options like included into it.
And by industry, you mean all the boys and girls that work in restaurants and hotels and bars and...
Bars and everything. But honestly, it's just, I mean, if you come in and you come in and if you ask for the menu, like, you know, we consider you part of the industry as well. So, I mean, if you come in and ask for the industry menu, we'll extend the industry menu to you as well.
That's awesome. That's delicious.
David, do you do any of the to-go fresh flavors, the wonderful salads, like... prepackaged to go so that somebody from TEP can come down here and say, I need 6 salads right away because we have a board meeting?
At the moment, we don't, but we, I mean, if you call us with, you know, some notice, we can definitely do that to go and just have it ready for you to pick up.
I think that'd be great because I realize that people don't like to walk down in the heat and they only have that half hour. So to be able to have that fabulous food, be able to take it, get here, pick it up, and then be able to take it. And that's all on your website then, how to call
all the menus,
that's great.
I want to make sure that Robin's new to town, and for people who imagine relocating or coming to town because they visited here and they had a great experience and are thinking about getting to know this place better, I'm going to ask you, Donna, and you, David, How can we describe for Robin what Tucson tastes like? How would you want to introduce her to this place and how it tastes?
The first words that come into my mind is red rock flint. Red rock flint. It's like the red rock on a piece of flagstone. Taking a lick of that, to me, that's what Tucson tastes like. That's what the desert tastes like. It is because all of the things that come from the caliche that we have within our soil taste like earth. And to me, there's no better taste of earth than licking a piece of red flintstone, flagstone, to be able to realize. The cactus, the temporary beans, anything that we grow comes from this region tastes like Mother Earth. So I would think that's what it would be like.
What are your food favorite things that are the tastes of home?
Napolitas. Napolitas, the temporary beans, the Sanavir Mission, the Pueblo that they have a garden there that is producing extra special beans that are coming out, the long purple beans, the, you know, beans and a rice that's coming. There's now mushrooms that are coming out from the...
And you brought us some gorgeous things today. Tell me about these oyster mushrooms that are dehydrated.
Well, I brought this for David as to say thank you for having us on the air here.
Oh, thank you.
I have fresh oregano. I have fresh stevia, which is the sweetener that you can use. It's really great in ice creams. I brought dehydrated oyster mushrooms that were grown in Vail. Lots of rosemary, lots of mint and thyme and lavender. So I thought this was my offering to you in the restaurant. And Jennifer said that everybody can use fresh herbs. So
no, yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
For that.
And one of the things that's great about David, and Robin, you might not know this yet, and I don't know if you've dined here at Panky yet or if this is our first meal together here.
Yeah.
David's been a really what I'll call a powerful and articulate culinary presence in this community for some time. And he has elevated the way people consider and think about Tucson food. In his travels and in his work as both a chef and as a host and as a leader in our industry. And for a young guy, he's just done so much to lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
And in this role as executive chef at Panko, one of the things he's done is he's truly reminded people where bright vitality can be found. And it's not buried under a pound of molten cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a finesse and a brightness to what he does that I hope that when we taste the food today that we're going to taste some of the little green salad and some of what I keep telling him is my favorite, the pozole. Now, the pozole has been on the menu here, the pozole blanco.
Yep.
But what he's done is, I want you to imagine someone lovingly placing their hands underneath and then just lifting with ascendancy and lightness and brightness.
Yep.
To something so familiar and yet so incredibly bright. It's really quite remarkable.
That's one of the things that you and Jennifer from Foodie agreed on was the pozole.
Oh, the pozole is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they had a fight over who would get the first bowl of that and who would finish the bowl. But it's so good. It's so wonderful.
So David, you're from this region and you're originally, if I'm not mistaken, you're from Jalisco, correct?
Yeah.
So you went and trained at the Cordon Bleu, so you've got this incredible Jalisco Cordon Bleu combo platter working. How does that show up in your food to make your food taste not only like your food, but Tucson food?
The Cordon Bleu?
The Cordon Bleu Jalisco combo platter.
Well, my family is from Jalisco, so I grew up with a lot of that food. And then, I mean, the Cordon Bleu kind of just just taught me technique. So I kind of
maybe refined technique, yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of just try to marry the French technique with, you know, some of the Mexican styles of doing some certain things.
What is the thing that you're currently making on any of your menus that delights you and surprises you so much at how delicious it's turning out? Because it's just that good that you would say, I want you to try this when you come.
Probably the uses of the chilies that I'm getting in, be it with the moles or the salsas and stuff like that. That's probably the... Lately, that's just what I've been more excited about.
Is there anything where you're taking a taste and you're like, oh, yeah, I got to taste that again because that was that good? What do you keep going back and saying?
I mean, arroz con leche is usually that.
You keep telling me about that. We're gonna have to drill down to the bottom of this. Hey, listen, we're gonna take a very quick first break. You are listening to. Oh wait, we're gonna do this. Carl is on the phone with a question. Carl, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing fine, and I've been listening to your program off and on for since they made the switch over and you started. But I've got a question. Where is there in Tucson that is a fine dining restaurant that's the equivalent of the Tack Room or Charles?
Wow. Fine dining restaurant that's the equivalent of the Tack Room or Charles. You know, I still send people all the time, if you really want to get fine dining, I will always send someone to the Arizona Inn.
That's what I was thinking, actually.
I think Arizona Inn still does a remarkably good job of that. I think, as with many places around the world and the country, fine dining is redefining itself in some respects. You get some of the most talented culinarians hearing what the people want and sort of taking it back just a little bit. I would send you to Maynard's. Maynard's is wonderful. I think, does it count as fine dining? I absolutely think so. I'd send you to Yano's, Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. I'd send you to Panka. I mean, yeah, I was just thinking,
you know, it used to be that fine dining was defined by a classic menu. Now I think, you know, let's be sure that what we want is a white tablecloth if we say fine dining.
That's basically it. I'm looking for a white tablecloth, fine china, crystal, you know, heavy silver.
That sounds like the Arizona Inn to me.
Yeah,
that sounds like the Arizona Inn.
Traditional fine dining.
Carl, this is such a good question. I'm going to open this up to the audience before we take our next break. And we're going to, if you hang on and give your email address and phone number to John, the engineer and board operator who's with us today, we're going to put the query out to our friends. And we're going to ask the audience and hope they call in with some ideas as well. Maybe there's something I just haven't discovered. But I know exactly what you're asking for. Do you have a special occasion coming up?
No, I've just been, you know, looking for something like that. You can find all the casual dining and the upper-level casual dining that you're looking for. But there are some times when you just want to get dressed up and go out and have, you know, kind of a formal dinner with someone.
An event dinner kind of.
Yeah, type of thing. You know, I mean, you go back to Charles. They were they had a Michelin star, several stars. And I just wondered, there's nobody in Tucson that has that anymore, or not Charles?
Well,
Tack Room, I meant.
Right, and I'm gonna take it one step further. And I don't know about you, but I miss the Ventana Room at Lowe's. The Ventana Room under Chef Philippe Troche and Chef Mark Erler was one of the great places I've ever been to in the world, let alone in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you were a fan of the Ventana Room.
I went there a couple of times. They were very, very good. But, you know, like I say, and I've been to the Arizona Inn, and I'm just wondering if there's some other places out there.
Well, we're going to find out. Carl, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for calling with the question. We're going to get you this information, and we will be back with more right after this. You are listening to Around the Table, live from the City of Gastronomy, power lunching here at Panka Restaurant. We'll be back with more right after this. This is Around the Table, live from the City of Gastronomy, having power lunch at Panka every Tuesday with Executive Chef David Solarzano, where we've invited the most interesting and influential newsmakers, tastemakers, style makers, movers, shakers, healers, foodies, and friends to join us for conversations over lunch about this remarkable place each and every day when we are together. We welcome your calls, 520-790-2040. And the question as posed by our listener and friend Carl, please tell us, where would you say is some of the best fine dining in Tucson today? Of course, the question begs to be asked because none of us feel like we eat like that anymore. And as we are dining right now at lunch today here at Panka on one of the most delicious little bright green salads, we were asking the question, how are you defining fine dining in Tucson, Arizona right now? With us today is a new Tucsonan. Her name is Robin Mather. She is a food writer. She's writing for the Arizona Daily Star. She is here with us today, and she's going to share some of her big news with us in just a few minutes. Joining us as well at our table is our good friend Donna DeConcini from the Southern Arizona Animal Food Bank. And what do you call your markets specifically? And we should say right now, if you still haven't had lunch, the trucks. Let's talk a little bit about this.
Okay, Tucson Food Truck Rally. We're downtown on Pennington every Tuesdays and Thursdays. We service all the community down there, the jurors as well as the judges and the workers, with really quick meals. We have a variety of food trucks, and a donation from each of the food trucks goes to supporting animals in being able to have them eat. So as we eat, so do the animals.
Mm-hmm. Southern Arizona Animal Food Bank has a really powerful mission. Tell everybody what that is.
Well, our mission is to be able to, first to put the Humane Society out of business. But other than that, we are trying to raise enough food and awareness so that there's no abandonment of animals due to lack of food, that people are not serving their own dinners first and to their animals so that everybody is able to eat and be well.
Right now, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you have the food truck rally downtown. And talk a little bit about some of the vendors who come out for those.
Well, they switch around, but some consistent ones that we've had is Nu Lan, Vietnamese restaurant, the food truck. They're also at Boxyard on 4th Avenue. And they do an incredible, incredible Vietnamese food. And it's quick and it's easy and it's wonderful
and
delicious.
They make a dandy banh mi.
Yeah, that's your favorite. I know.
It is my favorite.
Molecular Munchies, if you're interested in getting a hamburger that is undefinably delicious. They have all kinds of cheeses and mixtures and oyster mushrooms that they saute and fry, and leeks and different types of things, asparagus that they put on it to be able to make it just an exquisite cuisine. We do also Big Super G, and that's down there, and they do tacos and wings and different sauces, and they're also doing salads as well, so they'll be able to do that. We've got a barbecue truck that comes down, Guerrero Local Barbecue with Rich, and he does incredible barbecue ribs and briskets. And this keeps changing over. We have cool items like soft-served ice cream and shaved ice for those people that are out there wanting to do it. We are going to be opening up on Wednesday, so we'll be there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Oh, fantastic. And when's that going to start?
That's starting on the 1st of August.
Fantastic.
In the first week in August.
All right, so let's talk about fine dining and what defines fine dining. You're a native Tucsonan, and you've been here a long time. You've got some deep roots here, and you've also got a background in the hospitality industry. So you are somebody who understands what the words fine dining, originally when you were sort of, as they say, cutting your teeth in this business, what did you learn fine dining was?
Over a charcoal pit, over an open wood fire. That, to me, when I was growing up, that was our fine dining. We would spread a Indian blanket or a Mexican blanket out on the ground. My dad would put a charcoal into a pit, and we would do barbecued quail that he had caught that day, or we've had rattlesnake, we've had javelina, we would do hot dogs and hamburgers, but the hamburgers would be made with different kinds of meat, not beef, wild boar or pig. And so to me, eating the foods and Napolitas and grilling was our fine dining. Lamb spitted on but outside, breads being baked outside, so that, because the heat inside of a house would be so, you couldn't use your oven, especially in the summertime, so everything went outside. Pizzas in a pizza oven or pizza on the grill. So we spent most of our time outside, eating outside. To me, that was fine dining. I don't think I was introduced to a white tablecloth until I was probably 16, 17, or 18, being able to do a white tablecloth. And that's when I went to New York and was able to be with a crystal and white tablecloths. That wasn't our way for the family that when I grew up.
But when you came back, places like the Tack Room, places like Charles.
Right.
Talk about what we used to be.
Well, we used to, well, the tack room was the which is on Speedway, which is no longer, even though the boot is still there. The tack room, Arizona Inn. We would be at Llanos when Llanos was at the Tucson Museum of Art. That was a huge place for us to go. The Saguaro Corners was a fine dining back in the 70s and 80s. Being able to go to Westward Look, that was also a fine dining. The El Conquistador, when the El Conquistador was up and running, that was the old Pueblo Club. We used to go to the old Pueblo Club, and I spent many dinners there. To me, that was like Arizona Inn, but fine dining.
And then we've always had great steakhouses.
Great steakhouses, yep. Always the great steakhouses. Little Abner's. Way out is now in the middle of town instead of being an hour's drive from where we would be going. Being able to get from the butcher on Country Club and Grant, there was a butcher shop there that we would go and we would buy our beef and they would go ahead and chop it up for us. But they had carne asitas, they had carne asada, they had all kinds of different foods that we could put in beef wise. I'm trying to think of the El Charro.
Mountain Oyster?
Mountain Oyster. Yeah.
I think that would still count as fine dining, but I think it's still because it's a private club.
Club.
It's not quite the same. So we're with Robin Mather, who's new to town, who's sort of dropped in and become a member of our food community. And
well, actually, this is the second time I've been in Tucson. I lived in Tucson in the early to mid-70s. So I knew that I loved it, and when I had the opportunity to return here, I wanted to come.
So you knew some of these places that we're talking about.
I did.
And from your vantage point as a professional food writer who's lived and written about food all over the country, you, over the last 20 years, have seen the shift and change in fine dining. How, as a food writer, have you observed fine dining change in the last decade?
Well, you know, in the period that Donna was just talking about, a fine dining restaurant in Tucson, the food would taste pretty much like a fine dining restaurant in Chicago, because it was all classical. It was all classical.
So they'd be
French.
They'd be a Bill Oster, yeah. They'd classic be a Trout Amandine, they'd
yep,
be a
yep, yep,
filet
yep,
of sole,
yep.
Meunier.
Yeah, so classic French cooking. So what I've seen happen is that the white tablecloth restaurants in each city now are trying to more fully reflect the city that they're in, and so they're not simply doing classic French cooking anymore. Now they're trying to, as David was saying, incorporate local flavors and local ingredients, and trying to reflect their embeddedness in the culture where they exist. So that now a Tucson fine dining restaurant will not taste like a fine dining restaurant in Chicago.
So, in fact, is the definition of fine dining today a sense of taste of place? So that when you are dining with some of the accoutrements that would be identifiable as fine dining, from the level of service, the tablecloth, the crystal, etc., that are sort of more traditional elements, that you will always know where you are in the world? Is there something that is becoming...
That would be a great definition, but I think that fine dining is no more the Almandine fish. I think that fine dining is the service of food as it's presented onto a plate, into the table. That, to me, is fine dining,
well,
not classic.
To me, the classic techniques might be used to prepare the food, as David was saying, you know. The fish is going to still be sautéed. That's what he was talking about when he
right.
was talking about his culinary training, giving him a more refined way to approach his ingredients.
Right.
But, see, I consider the food we're eating today here at Penska fine dining because it's elevated.
Right.
It's lifted as highly as it can be.
Great definition. That's perfect.
And so it doesn't matter to me that we're sitting at a table that's wooden. You're sitting on a wooden back bench. That doesn't that's not a component of fine dining in my definition. The crystal and the silver, the heavy, you know, that's kind of like event dining. That's dining as theater almost to me.
And you could very easily find that with the equivalent of banquet food.
Right.
And is it really fine dining if the food is the sort of...
On a white tablecloth?
On a white table, just because it's on a white table. Versus this. I mean, to me, I don't know that I'll have a better little bowl of greens in this month
right.
than what I have in front of me right now. And this is so memorable. And if you haven't tasted this yet, this is one of the new salads that Chef David Solorzano has done. And you can see the vitality, the crispness,
yes.
the colors. I mean, everything about this just to me is an expression of his cuisine's vitality.
That's what I mean about
ooh,
it's... And again, the food's elevated. That's why I make that definition.
And right on cue, as if he was hearing us say this, Chef David Solorzano has brought some items out for us to share today. And this is the sort of typical of the kinds of elevations that have happened.
Exactly, elevation. That's the word.
But look at the bright green on the top of this pozole.
Yep.
Donna, let's get a picture of this because I want to share this with everybody that's listening. Chef David Solorzano, thank you. What did you just bring out?
You get the cardini salad first, and then you have the salsa, ensalada verde, the pozole blanco, and then that's the taco of today. It's a shimpec taco. Shimpec is a salsa from the Yucatan, but it pretty much just kind of deconstructed and made it into a taco instead.
Oh, fantastic. I love that. But I want you to look at how bright the beautiful colors are. They're great expressions of what they're supposed to look like. We've got a call from, is it Susie's on the line with us?
Yes, it is.
How are you? Thanks for listening.
Oh, well, thank you. I listen every day. You
oh,
girls sound
you.
Like you're having lots of fun. I didn't get the lady you're speaking with first name, but I want you to know that I was curious because she mentioned the old Pueblo Club, and I can tell you girls, that I will be 78 in September, and I lived here in the 50s, and if you didn't go to the old Pueblo Club, well, you just weren't in the gang. And it was, and I never, we moved away, so I never knew when it closed, and she said that she knew about it. I don't know if she meant it lasted through the 70s, is that what I
understand? So did the old Pueblo Club last through the 70s? Or
Yes,
that is when. So Susie's asking us, because it wasn't clear, did the old Pueblo Club close in the 70s, or did it? Is that just when you last started going there?
No, I went to the old Pueblo Club from as long as I can remember, but it was the fire at the OP Club up on the 13th floor closed the old Pueblo Club.
That's what closed it?
That's what closed it.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. Right. Well, it was the place to be.
It was the place
Tucson
to be.
Tucson was a one-horse town.
Well, I am thrilled that you're joining us and listening in, and I want you to come and have lunch with us sometime when we're here
at Panko.
We're here every Tuesday, and it's just more delicious than I can even tell you.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Well, you did have a wonderful show, Jennifer.
Oh, Susan, thank you so much.
You did a great job. It's hard to do when it's radio.
Well, you know who makes it easy is Chef David Solorzano and my passionate guests who love it as much as I do. And there's nothing more fun than sharing a passion with people who join you in that pursuit. And you are among that group with us. Thank you so much for sharing your time and calling in and listening in. We're going to take a very quick break. This is Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy, power lunching at Panko this Tuesday and every Tuesday with Executive Chef David Solorzano. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back, everybody. This is Around the Table live from the City of Gastronomy, power lunching live at Panko at number 50 Broadway in downtown Tucson, across the street from the courthouse. And most importantly, the source of some of the most delicious pozole I've ever eaten. At the hands of Executive Chef David Solorzano, the menu has just brightened itself in the most beautiful ways. And this beautiful, humble man will tell me that it's simple, but it's simply hard to do. And he makes it look easy. David, welcome back.
Thank you.
You've brought us out some pozole, you brought us out a little green salad and the tacos today. Would you talk a little bit about what you brought to this experience as executive chef?
What do you mean?
Well, this was a menu. It was a place that existed. They were doing a nice job. They had pretty loyal customers. But you came and were presented an opportunity, and you have made this place your own. How did you dream about doing that, and what have you done to make that dream come true?
I feel like I was trying to bring some type of a void that I felt like was in Tucson. I feel like Tucson mostly just kind of concentrates on Sonoran food, and there was a very big void on Mexican food, the way that I used to see it as a child, and the way that I, you know, the food that I try on my travels and stuff like that. So I just wanted to bring a lot more of what I think Mexican food really is, rather than just the presentation that Tucson has of it as a whole.
Now, Robin, you've lived here before. Robin Mather's a food writer and a food journalist for her entire career. She's written several books, is working on her third book. I want to get your impressions of what this food tastes like to you, because this is your first visit to Penca.
Okay, so what's fabulous for me is that each of these dishes is absolute simplicity. And this is what I was talking about, elevation. Absolute simplicity. There are not exotic ingredients. There's not complicated preparation methods. There's just the beauty of the simple ingredients elevated by a careful, extremely attentive detail to make sure that the food is presented in its most positive light.
Can you taste intention in food?
I can.
What's the intention you taste in this food?
What I'm finding is it's clear to me that David and his kitchen, you know, there's sort of a wish of health coming through for me on this food. All these dishes are presented in such a way that they make you want to eat good ingredients, well prepared. They're, you know, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I say that in the summertime when it's super hot, I like to keep a big bowl of gazpacho in the refrigerator and I eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And when you eat that, you can just feel the vitamins and the nutrition flowing into your body.
The vitality. I use the word vitality. And
exactly.
I use the word vitality to describe why the radish looks so bright red and bright white and bright green on the cilantro, and how the things that are on the table, everything looks absolutely like as full of life as it can possibly be. How can a lime look full of life? That's what a lime that's full of life looks like.
Right, I agree. So do you understand what I'm saying, David? Or should I call you chef? My apologies.
You can call me whatever you like.
Do you understand what I mean about the intention for health coming through in your food?
Yeah.
And there, you know, the preparations are not heavy. I'm not seeing a lot of fried items. Of course, I'm not seeing the whole menu right now, but I'm not seeing traditionally heavy. This is food that's perfectly suited to the climate that we're in and the temperature that it is outside today.
Yeah.
It's absolutely perfect, in my opinion.
When you taste food that is an expression of a classic, let's call it a green salad or the pozole in this instance, and you've had pozole 50 times, mm-hmm. and they've had it from homemade to restaurant style, and you've gone around and you've tried it different places, What do you experience when something has something revolutionary about it or a breakthrough about it? Because most of us that are food professionals will go out to eat regularly, and it really takes something special to break through the sort of sea of the ordinary. That it's good enough to be restaurant food, but it's not that special. What do you look for? What does something have to be as special to break through for you?
Let's keep this on the topic of pozole so that I can talk about it in that way, right? So what I want is pozole that is absolutely best in class for that dish. So
you don't have to guess whether it's pozole or just stew or broth or something else. Like, you know it's pozole.
Not only that, but I'm judging it against all the other pozoles that I've ever tasted. And it's like the judging... My internal judging is like the judging at the Westminster Kennel Club show. I want that dish to be its best expression. In other words, I love a good hot dog. I've eaten millions of really mediocre hot dogs. I know a good hot dog when I eat one. I know a good pozole when I eat one, right? So what I'm looking for is the dish that expresses its essence in the best possible way.
And when you taste this?
The broth is absolutely correct and better than correct.
Isn't it delicious?
Yes. The turkey, shredded turkey that's in it, it's not mingy little strands, it's nice chunks.
And the flavor of it has that quintessential turkey sweetness.
Yep, and that contributes to it as well. The pozole itself, it tastes to me almost as if it might be an heirloom type.
Yeah, it's pasture raised.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm getting that. And so the fragrance is fabulous. So when you see that beautifully presented dish of pozole, first of all, right away your eye responds to it. And my eye is definitely connected to my stomach. So when my eye sees something that looks beautiful like that, my stomach is prepared for it to be exquisite. Then when I taste it, and you saw maybe that I tasted the broth alone first. I didn't just dig in a big spoonful. I wanted to see where that broth landed. And it landed right above the very best I've ever had.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. And then, only then, did I start to go into, you know, digging in for the meat and the pozole. So that's how that works for me.
Well, we've been joined. Donna DeConcini has gone to the food truck rally downtown.
Yep.
And joining us now, dropping by to say hi, is our friend Greg Dana from Pima JTED. How are you?
Hello. Fine. Thanks for having me today.
We love having you here. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for visiting with us.
And sure.
We've got a lot of news going on, but I want to introduce you to our new friend, Robin Mather. She's a food writer and journalist who's come to town. She's going to be joining the Arizona Daily Star, among other things.
All right. I'm a freelancer for the Star.
You're a freelancer. And, of course, you remember Chef David Solorzano.
Absolutely. I remember his food.
Yeah, I know. It's really delicious. We're going to give you a spoon. We're going to get you
have one here.
Tasting this as well. And, again, why we love having Greg dropping by is because he runs the JTED program. And one of the dimensions of the JTED program in town here is that he's helping young culinarians discover that that's who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And giving them a platform to learn and train and become the kinds of young culinarians that will join mentors like Chef David Solorzano. He will help us, in partnership with Greg Dana and the guys at JTED, create the future of food here in the Old Pueblo. So,
and it's, I was listening to the show before I pulled in, and I used to work at the tack room. And I worked my way up from dishwasher onto the saute line, and it took a number of years. And I just wish I had a culinary program in high school that I could have taken advantage of that would have really taught me about the true culinary experience and what I need to know, the basics, all of those. I learned on hand at the tack room, and that was good training, but it would have really helped to have more formalized culinary education.
And not just because at the time the tack room was the place that had white tablecloths and
sure.
fine dining, it's just it had the reality of what it meant to be in the food business, and that's what it meant to be in the food business and hospitality
right.
industry at that time.
Correct. And it has changed. What you were discussing earlier, fine dining has, the definition has changed tremendously, but the art of preparing food so that people have this enjoyment as well as enrichment is of their body is really essential. But learning those culinary skills, I think, at an early age, whether people decide to stay in their culinary career or do something else, it's always great to know how to cook.
And it's just,
I couldn't agree with that more. I couldn't agree with that more. I think that one of the greatest problems that we have as... So, let me back up a little bit. I write mostly about what people do with food at home. You all are talking about restaurants, but I'm also interested in what people do with food at home. And parents need to be teaching their kids how to cook for themselves. Teach them how to grocery shop. They need to be teaching their kids basic food handling skills. Because when I was in high school, we had home ec.
Right.
nobody offers home ec anymore.
Well, we've got about a minute left in this segment, and I'm interested, just to explain for people, what is the difference between old-fashioned home economics and the JTED food experience that people will get in the Pima County schools now?
Home economics was more geared towards being able to prepare food for yourself and sustain yourself, taking care of your laundry, your home, and everything involved with that. Culinary arts is people work in industrial kitchens. The equipment is very different from what you have at home, and you have to know how to work with that equipment and to cook on a larger scale. So really, you know, my parents would always say, hey, make us something that you make at the tack room. And I'm like, okay, I'll need 40 pounds of flour.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's quite a different experience when you're working on the large scale for food service.
And we should say that the other difference is that in a world where you could incur an enormous expense going to a professional culinary school and maybe graduate with 50 or more thousands of dollars of student loan debt.
Correct.
And in a business where they're paying you essentially minimum wage in many, if not most, jobs, it's going to be a really tough slog. JTED gives a kid a chance to be professional grade ready without the incurring of that debt. We cannot overstate how important what you're doing for kids in many industries is right now for the students in Pima JTED.
Well, thanks, and we appreciate that. And, you know, it's so people, businesses such as Penka, don't have to take somebody who has zero skill and start them off at a very basic dishwasher position, which there's nothing wrong with busting suds. We all do it. Even as chef, I'm sure you wash your share of dishes still. But you start off in that, but it's great when the students can come in with that skill level that they can do much more.
We're at the end of our first hour of Power Lunch here at Penka. You are listening to Around the Table Live.